Alzheimer's disease affects 360,000 Texans, and it's the sixth leading cause of death in the state. And many times, it's family members who are caring for Alzheimer's patients. 70% of those non-paid caretakers suffer from depression. I'm Norma Martinez. Today on The Source, we're talking about Alzheimer's disease and dementia, what resources are available for patients and their caretakers, and what's really happening in the brain that forms the plaques that ultimately kill those neurons. We want you to call in with your experiences, with your stories today on The Source. I'm Norma Martinez, in for David Martin Davies. Joining us in the studio are George Perry, Dean of the College of Sciences at the University of Texas at San Antonio and the SEMS Chair in Neurobiology and a leading Alzheimer's researcher in the nation. Meg Barron is here. She's the regional lead for the state of Texas for the Alzheimer's Association. And Diane Theran, caregiver support specialist with the Alamo Area Council of Governments, Bear Area Agency on Aging. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Well, we want to hear your story at 210-614-8980. Have you been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, or are you a caregiver? We want you to share your experience with us. Again, the number is 210-614-8980. You can tweet us at TPR Source, or you can email us your comment or question at thesource@tpr.org. Meg, we're going to go ahead and start with you, with the Alzheimer's Association. Obviously, this seems to be the premier organization nationwide for individuals and caretakers regarding Alzheimer's. What specifically for South Texas does the Alzheimer's Association provide?
Oh, goodness. Now, that's a huge question.
Well, in a nutshell.
Sure. We provide resources for caregivers and those living with the disease. We have a huge amount of resources on our website, in our office. We work with caregivers to make sure they have the tools to be able to care for their loved ones. And you said earlier that a majority of people that have been diagnosed live at home, about 80% here in Texas. And if you go south, almost 90% live at home. They either can't afford to go to a senior living facility or they don't want to. They want to stay in their home and they need the resources and the loved one needs to understand the disease. We see a lot of depression, as you mentioned, and we work with the loved one to be able to get through that depression so they can provide the best care for their loved one.
Diane Theran of the Bear Area Agency on Aging, I know you're a caretaker specialist. Let us know what ACOG is doing to support caretakers. Briefly, we'll get into it a little bit more in detail later in the show.
Sure. I just want to give a little bit of background of kind of who ACOG is, who we are. We are a voluntary association of counties and municipalities. We cover 13 county region, so I specifically work with Bear. We have a counter agency on aging that covers their 12 surrounding counties. ACOG has a variety of services, primarily for planning, arranging partnerships in the community to serve those 13 counties. So I specifically work with those family caregivers. The National Family Caregiver Support Program is what it's officially called, to work with those family caregivers in Bear County. Similar to kind of what Meg had talked about, we do a lot of direct services, education and training, providing information to support those family caregivers.
And Dr. George Perry of UTSA, I know that UTSA just recently announced within the last month or two that it's launching this brand new brain health initiative. Can you go into more detail?
Well, it's a very exciting venture. It involves us organizing some of the top researchers UTSA already has that are doing brain disease, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, trauma, PTSD, a wide range of things. And then some new people have joined us from various universities, most notably Jenny Shea from UT Southwestern, who will play a major role in leading the effort, and Yonggong Lee from Case Western Reserve University, and Asif Maru from Harvard University. One of the major focuses is going to be developing cellular models of human disease, which we take skin cells from people with Alzheimer's disease and make a disease in a dish. We think this will circumvent some of the problems of studying Alzheimer's disease using rodents.
Well, let's talk about Alzheimer's disease. And it was first discovered in 1906, and in 111 years, we know more about the disease, but then again, we don't. So, Dr. Perry, if you could maybe elaborate what causes Alzheimer's disease. Well, I know that sort of the common thought of Alzheimer's disease, it's an accumulation of plaques in the brain.
Yes, that's been a dominant idea for at least 30 years, in which the accumulation of amyloid in the brain is thought to be causative for the disease. And there was
amyloid, can you define that for
amyloid
us?
Amyloid is a fibrous protein, little filaments, like little pieces of thread that wrap around each other and clog up the brain. And this fibrous protein was thought to be toxic and was important in killing neurons. The most critical test of that has been in human vaccination studies where plaques have been removed from people's brain, and the patients haven't shown clinical benefit. Our own studies suggest that that protein, the amyloid protein that makes up those fibers, actually is part of a protective response of the brain trying to maintain normalcy.
So sort of the equivalent of maybe a white blood cell attacking.
Correct. You got the appropriate analogy. Mm-hmm. Very much like an inflammatory response is associated with a bad event, but it's reparative. And that's why removing it is too simplistic. But there's been a lot of progress made in the past decade of understanding Alzheimer's disease, having parallels with heart disease in terms of risk factors, and having similarities with heart disease and other diseases of aging, of chronic diseases, which are usually not curable but effectively treatable. And that's been shown for Alzheimer's disease, diet, exercise, reducing stress, all the social things that the Alzheimer's Association has been stressing for decades really make a difference in lowering it. Some studies suggest 50 to 90% reduction.
And so just living basically a healthy lifestyle is not just only going to possibly prevent Alzheimer's disease or dementia, but it's also going to prevent a lot of other diseases that might be associated with obesity. Not that most Alzheimer's disease patients are obese, but I was reading about a study that the Milken Institute released that diseases that are affiliated with obesity tend to increase with the increasing population of obese. Now, how is, very quickly, if you could let us know, how obesity is associated with Alzheimer's disease? I'm not sure if this is something that was common knowledge.
It definitely increases your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. I think we know that you want to, as Dr. Perry mentioned, eat healthy, live a healthy lifestyle, and that will limit your risk. But there are many other factors that could also cause Alzheimer's disease that we're looking at. But age is still the number one risk factor, and we're all going to age.
Hopefully.
Well, we're trying to solve that problem, but.
Well, when we come back, we're going to try to decipher the differences between dementia and Alzheimer's. Maybe you've, you know, left your keys behind and you think, oh, I must be getting Alzheimer's. Or you walk into a room and you wonder, what did I walk in for? That happens to me all the time, and it probably happens to you as well. We're going to try to uncover that mystery when we come back. But right now, we want to hear your story at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Are you a caretaker of someone with Alzheimer's or dementia, or have you been recently diagnosed? Share your experiences with us on The Source. We're going to come right back. And welcome back to The Source. I'm Norma Martinez. Our topic today is dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And I'm joined in the studio by Dr. George Perry, Dean of the College of Sciences at UTSA and the SEMS Chair in Neurobiology. He's a leading Alzheimer's researcher. We have Meg Barron here of the Alzheimer's Association and Diane Theran with the Bay Area Agency on Aging. She's a caregiver support specialist. And we're taking your calls at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Before we go into the differences between dementia and Alzheimer's, we're going to play a clip from a BBC News documentary about a 58-year-old woman. Her name is Wendy, who shares her experience the first time she realized that there was something wrong.
I used to be renowned for having a really good memory. I could remember anything months ago, people's names, but suddenly I'd be sat in a meeting and halfway through a sentence, I'd forget the most silly of words. And that was when something hit me that it wasn't quite right.
This is where I had my first experience of what dementia can do to your brain. The time I came out of my office and didn't have a clue where I was. And I didn't know who all the voices belonged to that I could hear. I was just lost. I stood here and just froze for a second. I decided to walk away and down the corridor, hoping that no one would come out and say hello or notice that there was something wrong. But I thought if I walked down the corridor, then I would be able to hide away for a few minutes or however long it would take for the fog to clear. And after that time, it's suddenly like the fog's clearing, the mist has lifted. It makes your heart thump. Let's put it like that.
And that again was Wendy, who was interviewed by BBC News for a documentary. She was sharing her story about the first time she realized there was something wrong. We're going to again ask for your input here at 210-614-8980. Is this a similar story to something that you may have heard with a family member or a loved one? 210-614-8980. Diane Theron with the Bay Area Agency on Aging. Is this a common story that you hear among caretakers of people who have Alzheimer's that they just don't know where they are?
Sure. No, definitely. We've had those stories. I think the biggest thing, too, is sometimes when we start to gather the information, they can look back and start to see different instances where that was happening to their loved one. I think Meg had touched on, we've talked before about sometimes the signs aren't where it started. There's always something prior to that. And the idea that what is normal aging? What, you know, memory does tend to lapse as we get older. What is normal? Those kind of forgetful episodes, as opposed to what is abnormal? What shouldn't be happening to you as you're aging in terms of cognitive issues? And so that is a common thing with the caregivers, is seeing that in their loved ones and also helping them identify that. We have caregivers that don't necessarily live with the loved ones they're caregiving for. So how often are they seeing them? And at some point they may be seeing them and realizing it came on all of a sudden, but maybe it hadn't. So helping them identify what to look for.
Well, Meg Barron with the Alzheimer's Association, what's the difference really between Alzheimer's and dementia that may just be age-related?
Sure, and I'll give a very simplistic, I guess, explanation of what it is. Alzheimer's disease is a type of dementia. I think easier to explain it is cancer is a big umbrella name, and you have many different types of cancer. Dementia is the big umbrella term, and there's many different types of dementias. And Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia. And again, that's very simplistic. There's other ways to kind of go into it in more detail, which I know Dr. Perry can do beautifully. But very simplistically, it is a type of dementia. And there are, again, many different types of dementias. Some are controllable. Depression is a type of dementia. A UTI, a urinary tract infection, is a type of dementia. Yes, and those are treatable and curable. But then there's the incurable dementias like Alzheimer's, Lewy bodies, Parkinson's dementia, and those cognitive impairments they're a deadly brain disease.
And Dr. Perry, I think she gave you a pretty good lead up. Would you like to follow up?
Well, the tremendous lead up is that aside from the classification of dementia being the global term and Alzheimer being responsible for 60 to 70% of dementia in older individuals, it's really important that people seek professional help, guidance from the Alzheimer's Association and other support groups, but seeing the appropriate psychiatrist, neurologist, to find out if they are suffering from dementia. You talked about Wendy, and the story is similar to Still Alice. You have a young individual. Alzheimer's is more obvious in young individuals, but most people are older individuals. and you have older individuals that are living alone, isolated, and have a lot of reasons to have other health issues, it's important that those are carefully analyzed to see if there are curable aspects, and even if not curable, things that can be addressed.
Our number again is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're going to Antonio. Antonio, you're a former geriatric nurse practitioner?
Yes.
Oh, tell us a little bit about your experience, please.
Well, I worked for about 10 years in nursing homes and geriatrics and saw a lot of diagnosis of Alzheimer's, which included dementia and the rest, what you're talking about, Parkinson's, that comes along, I guess, with it. But my question was about the obesity. Now, if obesity is a trigger or a contributor to developing Alzheimer's, because most of these people, unless I was getting them in mid or later stages, they don't even have the, thrive factor, where they won't even eat. They refuse to eat. You put the food in their mouth and they still just let it dribble out of their mouth. So they were not obese. They were very, very frail.
Yeah, it's a little complexity because the risk factor of obesity is midlife obesity. If you looked at those patients when they were in their 40s and 50s, were they obese then? And in fact, in later life, obesity is actually slightly a protective factor from Alzheimer's disease. It reverses.
How is that?
I don't know. You know, there's a link between Alzheimer's and diabetes, still not understood very well, and also really relevant to our community, Hispanics are at higher risk.
That's very interesting. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Just really quickly, Dr. Perry, before the show, you gave a number as to how many researchers are out there studying Alzheimer's?
30 to 50,000 researchers around the world are studying Alzheimer's disease.
And very little by little, more information's coming out, but still a lot of, like you said, I don't knows.
Well, not knowing what actually initiates the disease and more relevant for patients and families, not a really effective therapeutic.
We're going next to David. Again, we are live today. Give us a call with your story at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. David, you have a loved one with dementia.
Yes, ma'am, I do. It's my mother, 92 years old. The last 3 or 4 years, we've seen her progressive, how she's been forgetting a lot of stuff, and it's gotten to the point where, sometimes she forgets what time of day it is, but she is very independent. She's always been very independent, but one of the things that keeps her thinking that she can do stuff is because she's very healthy. She does not have any, she's not diabetic. She has no heart problems. She takes the levothyroxine, and she's got something for her good. And that's all the medication she takes. So because she feels healthy, she thinks she's all right. And we try to explain to her how that, this is the reason she forgets stuff and that, she has trouble walking. But it's been a very tough fight for us, and it's been very hard for us as a family to see her suffer this way.
And did you say, David, that your mother was 92? Is that what you said?
90, yes, ma'am.
Well, I think that's pretty. And when did she start showing these signs of decline?
Probably in her late 80s.
So, Meg, with the Alzheimer's Association, how would you like to respond?
Sure. First, David, I'd like to say, please call us. It's 800-272-3900, 24/7, and let's give you some resources to help take care of your mother. And I know we gave some facts and figures earlier, but one out of every two senior over the age of 90 will develop some form of dementia. So it's the fastest growing generation in the 90s, and we're seeing a lot more people develop Alzheimer's disease. They've passed heart disease, they've passed cancer, they've survived all of that, got into their 90s, they're generally very healthy, and suddenly they develop Alzheimer's disease. And that's, again, David, I'm sorry you're dealing with this, but you're not alone. And so we're here to help you. And yes, you can be dealing with a lot with your mother, and just know, again, that though she's independent and working on her own, she still needs you there. And this disease is going to progress.
And I'd like to say to David that with the Bayer Aging Program, we do have supportive services as well. I think the biggest thing, and I do come across that a lot, especially again, if, like you said, your mom is trying to communicate that to her and finding a way. Safety is always important. I think that's the most important safety, whether she wants to live alone or if somebody's willing, to take her in. But how you choose to do that as a family, sometimes you need those tools and how to go about that. So we talk about a family meeting, planning. So definitely with the Area Agency on Aging, you can contact us at 210-477-3275 to ask about those services.
Our number again is 210-614-8980. We're also tweeting live at TPR Source, and you can email us a question or comment at thesource@tpr.org. And we did have a listener who emailed, Jonelle. She says that her mother is in the last stages of Alzheimer's. She's lived with her for almost 2 years. And she says, in addition to watching this horrific disease ravage her mind and now her body, the hardest thing to deal with is the constant repetition of words, phrases, and nonsense. Stop talking. What causes this? So I'm opening up the floor to either of our three guests who'd like to tackle
that. I'll
let
you, Dr. Perry, talk about what causes it, and I can talk about the ways of redirecting.
Okay, well,
I think you're best at dealing with the behavioral aspects. Why do people repeat, etc.? They don't remember what they said before, so they get into cyclic logic and repeat themselves.
And usually it's something else that's bothering them. It's not, they're asking where my husband is and he's been dead many years. That's not what she's looking for her husband. She's trying to tell you something. And it's trying to figure out what it is. Is it she needs to sit down and go through pictures of her loved one to help bring back that memory? That person is trying to tell you something. And yes, it takes some work to figure out and translate what they're telling you.
210-614-8980 is the number to call to share your story with us, 210-614-8980. Now, my mother had a friend who recently died from Alzheimer's, and remember we once met up for lunch with her and her husband, and she would tell a story. It was always a funny little story, but then a few minutes later she would tell that story again. Obviously, you know, we laughed as if it was the first time we heard. Now, I know a lot of caregivers probably get very frustrated, and I'll direct the story or this question to you, Diane, with the Area Agency on Aging. How should family members react when that happens? Because again, you get that frustration. I've heard this story. Didn't I tell you already, Mom? What do you think is the right response here?
Sure. And I just want to say, I mean, our normal reaction will probably be, I've heard that story 10 times. And we have a lot of caregivers that kind of beat themselves up a little bit. It's human nature. But Meg had mentioned some more of that redirection. Sometimes it's kind of, we say, kind of go with the flow. sometimes you have to be in their world. Remember, sometimes they're no longer in our world. They could be at a different place in a different time. So there could be underlying anxiety, fear that they have. So it's trying to figure out what that is, and to redirect is a great technique.
So, and also just to be patient.
Exactly.
Again, our number is 210-614-8980. We have a lot of phone calls to get to after the break. But again, you can share your story with us online by emailing us your question or comment at thesource@tpr.org or tweet us at @TPRSource. I'm Norma Martinez in for David Martin Davies. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to The Source. I'm Norma Martinez, and for David Martin Davies. Today, our topic is Alzheimer's and dementia. And we have representatives here from the Alzheimer's Association, Meg Barron. She's the regional lead for the state of Texas for the Alzheimer's Association. Diane Theran is here, a caregiver support specialist with ACOG's Bayer Area Agency on Aging. And we have Dr. George Perry of UTSA. He's dean of the College of Sciences, the SEMS chair in neurobiology, and a leading Alzheimer's researcher. Now, Meg, with the Alzheimer's Association, there you have a list of 10 warning signs to look out for Alzheimer's disease. Can you maybe run down some of those main points?
Sure. And yes, it's a long list. Please visit our website to see the whole list with details at ALZ.org. But the most common, I think, sign that people think of with in relation to Alzheimer's or another form of dementia is memory loss that disrupts daily life. Now, we all have memory loss. Stress, multitasking always calls memory loss. Losing your keys, misplacing your keys, that happens to all of us. But this is memory loss that disrupts your life. My grandmother had Alzheimer's. I was her caregiver. And in her case, I mean, she is unable to backtrack. If she lost her keys, she couldn't go, well, I brought them in with me with my groceries. I went into the kitchen. I set down the bags. They must be in the kitchen. With someone with Alzheimer's disease is unable to backtrack, to retrace their steps. So that's a huge sign. My grandmother forgot how her oven worked. She was cooking one day and put her hand in the oven without an oven mitt. Huge, I mean, that's a sign. You got to know, you got to wear an oven mitt if you're sticking your hand in an oven. My grandmother wore a coat in the middle of summer because she didn't realize she wasn't supposed to wear her fur coat. I mean, these are definite signs that something is not right. We also had a gentleman here in San Antonio who gave away $35,000 of his money to a telemarketer. And again, that's just a huge sign, and hopefully you catch someone with Alzheimer's before something like that happens. And wandering is, again, another sign. Somebody who's suddenly disappearing, forgetting where they are. When they're driving, I do get calls from people. I can't remember where I am, what I'm doing, how the car works. I mean, again, these are huge, very obvious signs.
Again, our number to call is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're going next to Ben. Ben, good afternoon. You have a question regarding your wife.
Yes, thank you very much. My wife was diagnosed with primary progressive aphasia using an Emovid PET scan of 2014, and so not a lot of information on PPA, but we did have that done in Houston at the Neurodegenerative Center. So just any comments would be great.
Well, aphasia, first of all, a definition, Dr. Perry or Meg?
It's just forgetfulness, and it's kind of the basic of it.
Yeah. Forgetfulness of words.
Yeah.
And so what advice would you give to
if she's
to
limited to that aspect, to that symptoms? No other pieces are other memory loss, behavioral changes?
Could we bring Ben? Again, could you ask the question, Dr. Perry?
Those subtypes of PPA, and basically it's progressed to the point of her needing, care, full-time care.
But she has other symptoms?
Well, can't speak, seems to have begun having a little tremor in her left hand.
Yeah, there can be a lot of reasons to have, I'm not a neurologist, and I don't have your clinical picture in front of me even then. It's really critical to get professional help from a neurologist.
And I would definitely seek, a second opinion maybe here as well, just to look into that.
Okay, our number again is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Again, our lines are filling up, so if you can't get through, you can tweet us at TPRSource or email us your question or comment at thesource@tpr.org. Colleen, good afternoon. You have a question today.
Yes, hello. Thank you. It's sort of a two-part question. As some background, my paternal grandmother died of Alzheimer's back in the 80s before there was a lot of ways to treat it, which I'm grateful for because now my father has it. And we learned this because about 11, 12 years ago, he had developed bladder cancer, and so he had to be operated on, and they did a suction. And after his recovery, my stepmother noticed that he seemed to have a bit of, a cognitive decline a little bit. He was a sitting judge at the time, and after she expressed her concern, they did a PET scan, I believe, and they said, well, he does have some shrinkage of the brain, but he's all right. After about a year and a half, two more years, she became more concerned, and he did as well because he, he was a civil court judge, so his decisions, he didn't want those compromised. He didn't want to be lacking, so he had some more testing done, and at that time they recognized that the shrinkage was abnormal.
So are you asking, Colleen, whether his decline is linked to something that happened during the procedure?
No. What I'm asking about is, what is the relationship of anesthesia to the advancement of Alzheimer's?
Dr. Perry?
Yeah, there's been a connection there. It's still being studied that especially elderly people, when they undergo general anesthesia, might be at risk of decline after. So there's some statistical relationship because of the changes in circulation, et cetera, during anesthesia. But it probably means that he already had the signs of decline. This just pushes people over. If you look at people that have dementia, when they have a conversion, very often it's associated with an event, falling, a stroke, or something else, and it moves people off the track of compensating, which we all do as we get older, to maintain normalcy.
Our number again to call is 210-614-8980. Again, our lines are filling up, so if you can't get on the line, you can tweet us at TPR Source or email us at thesource@tpr.org. Darlene, you have a recommendation on a book that helps you during your...
Yes, thank you all very much for this show, and sure. I appreciate your experts on this subject. My mother had Alzheimer's, as well as other friends that I've had. And the book that I recommend for the layperson is called The 36-Hour Day. I do not know the author, I'm sorry to say, but the book is excellent, and it lets you see almost what you might prepare yourself for. So there could be anger issues, there, you know, definitely forgetfulness and diet and all that. But it's a good book for those people who are caregivers or find themselves in the situation where their loved one is different and is diagnosed then with some form of dementia. The other thing that I wanted to say about anyone who is caring or visiting a person with Alzheimer's, know the person is somewhere in there. When I was with my mother, we would look at photographs, and she got to the point where she said, "I do not know, I can't remember what I'm looking at, Dar. It's not in my head anymore, so it must be in my heart."
Thank you so much, Darlene. Diane with Bear Area Agency on Aging, is that 36-hour day book something that you recommend?
Definitely. We have a list of books. I tend to try to keep a resource. We keep a library, and so we have from those that are caregiving, from speaking to children about maybe what's going on with grandma. So there's always, that's a great recommendation of just trying to get a little bit more understanding.
Well, again, the number to call is 210-614-8980. And I think caregivers, they actually suffer from something called caregiver syndrome or stress, correct?
Yes, definitely. It could be caregiver burnout. Definitely, we talk about their own signs. Our biggest thing is, you know, you need to take care of yourself. You cannot care for someone else if you don't make yourself a priority, because it could be, you know, this disease process could be many years down the road, and you can't treat it like an acute illness. If it's a chronic illness, then, you know, how are you going to make it into your daily life? How are you going to be a caregiver for the long haul sometimes? So definitely taking care of yourself as a family caregiver.
And I know the Bear Area Agency on Aging, they provide a respite program for caretakers.
We do. Some of our direct services do involve some temporary in-home respite. We also can work with adult daycares that are primarily a specific Alzheimer's dementia. I'd like to share that we also do classes for family caregivers to talk about a lot of these issues, stress, depression. We do that in what's called Powerful Tools for Caregivers. We also do what's called a Stress Busting Program for family caregivers. And they can get that information. The number I had mentioned earlier, 210-477-3275, and we do offer those classes in both English and Spanish.
And as was mentioned at the top of the show, 70% of caregivers suffer from depression. And I'm going to say that in a situation like this where they're caring for somebody with dementia or Alzheimer's, obviously it's not something they're prepared for. And perhaps in a, you know, a lot of minority cultures, Hispanic, African American, we have a tendency to want to care for our elders. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to sacrifice our lives in order to help care for the people we love. So what advice do you have for people who find themselves in that situation?
Exactly. And again, it's more about how do I build that caregiving into my life? I still need to be, you know, a mom. I still need to be, if I work full-time, I'm still an employee. I'm still a parent. So that's just another role that you take on. It you know, hopefully will not encompass sometimes, and it does, and that's what caregivers sometimes happen is it encompass their entire life, but they have to build it into their life. This is a part I play. And if you need the support to get those supportive services, you cannot do it by yourself. You can. As professionals, we reach out for partnerships because we know, the issue is so large. So we need to have them do that as well as reach out for help and support.
The number again is 210-614-8980. Share your story with us. Do you have Alzheimer's disease? Are you a caretaker or is somebody in your family or a loved one, have they been diagnosed with Alzheimer's or do they have dementia? Call in and share your story with us. Again, the number is 210-614-8980. You can also email your question or comment at thesource@tpr.org. Welcome back to The Source. I'm Norma Martinez and for David Martin Davies this week. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And in the studio with us today, George Perry, Dean of the College of Sciences at UTSA, a leading Alzheimer's researcher. He's also the SEMS Chair in Neurobiology at the university. Meg Barron is here. She is the regional lead for the state of Texas for the Alzheimer's Association. And Diane Theran is a caregiver support specialist with ACOG's Bear Area Agency on Aging. And we've heard a lot of stories already today, whether you're a caretaker or a loved one of somebody who is suffering from Alzheimer's, and the lines are lighting up, so I think we're going to go to our next call. We're going to go to Philip. Philip, I understand you might have a history of Alzheimer's in your family.
Yes, I do. My grandmother suffered from Alzheimer's as well as my father, and my question is really maybe to the doctor dealing with the issue of dietary habits. And some of the research that I had done, I looked at if you have, like, high fat in your diet, like we would eat a lot of ice cream growing up and everything, that can also add to it. And so I was really concerned about dietary habits.
How old were your family members when they developed Alzheimer's?
My grandmother was 85, but she actually misstepped and she got hit by a car because she kind of lost her way, and we noticed that she had changes because she was somebody that always had food in her house. But when my parents went to go clean out her home, all she had was just a jar of mayonnaise and a thing of ketchup, no food.
So she may have been wandering then when she was hit.
And father, his really came on stronger when he did have hip replacement surgery, and we felt it was kind of maybe triggered by the anesthesia.
And how old?
He was 75 when he passed.
So with those ages, it's not an improbable event to develop Alzheimer's disease, even if you had eaten perfect diets. The risk of developing the disease is never zero. And in fact, there's no reason to regret or feel bad or guilt about dietary issues like any other issue. More, the issue is inheritance. Inherited Alzheimer's disease usually has an onset more in the 50s and 60s when it's obvious.
Okay, well, thank you for that phone call. Our number again is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You know, so many studies are coming out about Alzheimer's disease just recently. Just yesterday, in fact, Vanderbilt University announced it's conducting a study on whether nicotine might help individuals with Alzheimer's. They're doing a study on with nicotine patches. It's a controlled study there. The FDA just fast-tracked a brand new therapy, Alzheimer's therapy candidate called ALZ-801. And there's a study in Sweden that shows anticoagulants can reduce the risk of dementia by 48%. Now, obviously, that's something that most people who take that aspirin a day are probably happy to hear. But, of course, you always want to ask your doctor first, because if there are always conditions to taking that aspirin, it could be harmful for many effects. So before we get to some more callers, obviously there's so much research going into Alzheimer's, but there's still so much uncertainty. And I understand that the actual official diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease doesn't come until after death, Dr. Perry.
That's changing. People are using biomarkers now to make a diagnosis, because the diagnosis is based on certain pathological changes in the brain, like Dr. Alzheimer originally described, and those are seen in autopsy. But you can actually do imaging studies, biomarker studies, and you can get to a diagnosis that's probably 90%+ accurate.
Well, Meg, with the Alzheimer's Association, there is this company, I'm pretty sure people have seen the commercials, 23andMe. They say they can, you know, tell you what diseases you might be at risk for. And apparently they, for $200, you can send in a sample and they'll let you know whether you're at risk for Alzheimer's. Is this something that is actually credible?
I'm going to always encourage people go see their doctor, see an actual physician. A neurologist would be best, but I know we're all looking for the answer. Definitely all our researchers are looking for the answer, but always going to your physician is the best resource.
Well, we're going to go next to the phones. We're going to hear from Margaret. Good afternoon, Margaret.
Hi, how are you all?
Doing great.
Good.
I wanted to just share a story. Alzheimer's does run in my family. It seems like a lot of our relatives live to be into their 80s and 90s. And my mother-in-law has Alzheimer's, and she's very far advanced now. But she lived with us about 10 years ago, and we cared for her as long as we could. But the thing that really I wanted to share with you was a story about my elderly aunt, who developed Alzheimer's in her 80s, and she lived in Indiana in the same town she was born in for over 80 years and was a very bright school teacher, historian. Everybody in the town knew her. And as she started to develop symptoms of forgetfulness and Alzheimer's, we began to record her stories because we were afraid that as she got older, she would no longer be able to communicate those things to us. And so I found it to be very comforting, not only for her, but for me as well, as she got into the advanced stages of Alzheimer's, to be able to capture those memories before her symptoms got too severe.
That's a beautiful story, Margaret. And I actually think that's something we should do for all our elders.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Margaret. I think that's a great idea and also shows great respect for our older generations. I think sometimes we overlook some of their stories and their experiences, and recording them is a beautiful way to keep them.
Well, I think we have time for one more caller, and we're going to Debbie. Debbie, good afternoon.
Yes, how are you?
Doing great.
I just have a quick story. First of all, I'm 60 years old. And I have been seeing a neurologist and also a very, what I call, up-to-date, well-cared doctor. I've been concerned about Alzheimer's for the past almost 10 years of my life. And my well-care doctor did DNA testing on me. And from the way he explained it to me is that basically I am in a very low percentage going by my DNA of having Alzheimer's. I did have major brain injury when I was back in my 20s. And the way that my doctor has explained it to me is that I'm kind of going through what everyone goes through as they get older, you know, memory loss and that type of thing. But because of my brain injury, I'm going through it a lot faster.
Okay. And Meg or Dr. Perry, do you have a response?
I mean, your story is fascinating. And
but does brain trauma, does trauma to the brain tend to accelerate symptoms of dementia?
I think with each person,
it increases
it's different.
The risk, yeah. Though.
Okay.
You can, yeah, we keep saying that it increases your risk, but that's unfortunately in this situation the same thing. Yeah.
Well, we still have a few more minutes, and I'm curious, Alzheimer's disease is obviously a very personal topic to so many people. And so I'm curious as to what got each of you into the field. Now, Meg, you were talking a little earlier about your grandmother. Sure. Did she play a very important role in you choosing
Absolutely.
This field?
My grandmother had Alzheimer's for 12 years, and I was one of her caregivers in the family. And it was back, I know one of our callers mentioned back in the early, for us, the 90s, when there wasn't much out there. We had no clue what was going on. And we went through everything, the falls, the wandering, the, like I said, putting her hand in the oven, my grandfather covering it up and hiding it. It was there, the stigma, everything. And so, yes, getting involved here was definitely my grandmother driving me from heaven. Absolutely.
And what about you, Diane?
Similar. My paternal grandmother was the only grandmother I had growing up. And so, just listening to her stories. I was the kid that, grandchild that would sit down and listen to her and just out of respect and my admiration for the life that she lived. Aging has been my niche and something I've done since I've become a social worker. And so definitely I have a passion for it.
And what about you, the caregiver support as well?
Definitely. I've been in the field of aging for 17 years doing direct practice, and so in the majority of the cases, there is going to be a family caregiver, someone that is unpaid, that is supporting them. So seeing that and then wanting to support them as well, sometimes they are the forgotten person in that situation, so wanting to support them and acknowledge them for what they're doing.
Now, Dr. Perry, I understand you have a very interesting leap in careers.
You read carefully.
I did. Tell us what you started off your career as.
Marine biologist at an oceanographic institution.
So how did that translate into Alzheimer's brain research?
I did a postdoctoral fellowship at Baylor College of Medicine, and when I was looking for a faculty position, I was recruited at Case Western Reserve University to join an Alzheimer group.
But how does that happen?
I didn't know
it. Go recruiting at ocean places.
That would
sea
take
world,
more time than we have here. But at the time I was recruited for that, I did not know what Alzheimer's disease was. I had never known anyone who had Alzheimer's till very recently, since I study mostly deceased people, their brains of people. So I got involved in it when there was very little known about Alzheimer's disease.
And you've since become one of the leading researchers in the field, or at least most cited.
Yes, he is. He'll
never admit it, so I'm glad that you two are here. So again, Meg Barron with the Alzheimer's Association, give people a little bit more information really, really quickly on how they might be able to find out more.
Sure. 800-272-3900 is our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week helpline. ALZ.org is our website. Please come and ask for help because we're here for you.
And Diane, I know you work closely with the Alzheimer's Association. How can people reach out
Definitely.
To you?
Definitely, sure. Our number is 210-477-3275. You can also visit the ACOG website at aacog.com.
We want to thank Dr. George Perry with the University of Texas at San Antonio. He's a dean of College of Sciences and the SEMS chair in neurobiology. Meg Barron, the regional lead for the state of Texas for the Alzheimer's Association. And Diane Theran is a caregiver support specialist with ACOG's Bear Area Agency on Aging. I'm Norma Martinez. David Martin Davies will be back on Monday. Thanks for listening and have a great afternoon.